Friday night, and it's been a kind of a wild week as gas prices soar across the nation and baseball settled their rich people problems. I'm glad for that, though. We will have a full season of Major League Baseball starting April 7th, so that's good.
There we go.
And now here in Houston, we kind of wait to see what happens to if Carlos Correa decides to stay or decides to go. My gut feeling tells me he's going to go, though. But you never know. I've been wrong before, so we'll see. But yeah. I felt like it was some positive.
As a bandwagoner, I couldn't care less.
Well,
bandwagon.
Thanks for admitting. But I felt like it was a positive in the week of a lot of negative that baseball settled their differences and got their collective bargaining agreement done. And we'll be having baseball here soon. Because, you know, this is that time of the year where sports kind of sucks. You know, the NFL is over. No one's really paying attention to basketball yet till the playoffs. You know, maybe some people have a team in the college tournament. They watch some college basketball. But even then, so it's like this is that kind of dull time of the year where there's nothing much going on sports-wise. So it's good to have something to look forward to because as of a couple days ago, we weren't even sure if we were going to have baseball to look forward to. So I'll take it as a win. I'm happy for it. And but yeah, this is Mark.
This is Matt.
Long, the Bet Chum.
Bet Chum.
This is the Rebel Radio Podcast, and thank you for tuning in today as we or tomorrow or whatever day you listen to the show. I don't know why it might not be actually today because today's Friday. And normally I don't release episodes till Monday morning, but because we're doing a current release this week, if I get it done in time, this episode might come out a little earlier than usual. We'll see how the weekend goes. I should have time. I'm on vacation as of today, so I have 9 days of not giving a fuck about work and can do whatever I want, and that's good. So, which is going to be a lot of staying home because of the high gas prices. I'm not going too many places.
I know, right?
I put 50 bucks in the car last night to even fill it up. I was like, holy shit. Damn.
Yeah. But I'm not looking forward to actually having to fill mine up all the way. So I'm like, it got to about a 3/4 of a tank yesterday and I filled it up.
Yeah. I'm like,
it looks like it's going to be like $20-something a quarter tank.
Fun.
Lava Ucrania.
Yeah.
What do you do, though? You got to have gas. So, you know. But how have you fellas been this week?
Overworked.
Yep.
It's always been the case long, huh, for you lately? Yeah, man, that dude from your company that came to my store today, good Lord, I wish I had a bag of breath mints to hand him. It was rough checking in his delivery. Yeah. I mean, it was like,
dude, wear a mask.
I mean, it was like ass mouth, dude. I'm not gonna lie, it was that bad. It's like, who's
probably
ass
ate ass or something.
Maybe he went ass to mouth.
I mean, he listened to our clerk's episode. He's a nice fella, but good Lord, man, it was it's the nature of the business, though. I'm sure we've all dealt with it and dealing with bad breath, and then you start to think, man, I hope I never have bad breath like that, you know? Because it's like, oh, ooh.
I always at least rinse my mouth out every morning when I wake up.
Right. You know? Well, yeah, I'll brush my teeth or, you know, whatever. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe don't eat ass before you go to work, you know?
Yeah. Ugh. I mean, he was at my store early, so he had to get up really early and eat ass if he did. I mean, but it's possible.
did you have ass for breakfast?
No. Why do you ask?
Oh. All right, moving on.
Moving on. My week hasn't been too bad. Not as busy as last week when I had baseball and refrigerator chaos. That was a rough week last week. This week's been a little bit smoother. So, because we only had baseball once this week because we rained out on Tuesday. So then we only had practice. So, been not too bad. Not too shabby, as they say. But all good. So, Matt, you still working overnight? They didn't move you to days yet?
I am working it's like a semi overnight, semi day schedule.
It was a yes or no.
I go in at 12:30. I go in at 12:30 in the morning and I work till 11. Yeah, you be the judge.
That's basically a overnight schedule, dude. That's basically overnight. Yeah. 12:30 midnight is a night schedule. So
yeah,
it was just a yes or no question.
I don't know. I felt like it was more existential than that because I felt like it was overnight working overnight, but I don't start before the day starts to end. Like I start on a new day. So I'm like, is it overnight or is it at night?
It's dark outside. It's night.
Oh, okay. You wake up at 5 a.m. Is it dark? Is it nighttime?
Yes, that's nighttime.
I thought it was the morning.
Anyway.
It's confusing.
Let's officially start the show then. Ask Matt a yes or no question. I get a complicated answer. I should have known.
That's right. I will complicate it.
Download This, where we tell people what we streamed, watched, checked out. And our feature film would normally be our Download This, but it's our feature film, so it doesn't count this week. And it was sort of y'all's Download This last week anyway, since y'all saw it a little bit before I did. Well, whoever wants to start, man, anybody watch anything cool this week or check anything out?
No.
No.
Thanks, Log.
Not me.
It's Arnold Schwarzenegger one-liners. Can we go rescue this person? No.
I don't know. No. I watched every Batman live-action movie except the Schumacher films. Just because they're there on HBO Max. And I was like, I feel like I have to, when we talk about the movie, I have to make a judgment
on like the most?
How I rank it. I think I still like The Dark Knight the most. Honestly, I felt it's obviously not, a different type of movie than the one we're going to talk about today. But I like it. There's a little bit of that.
It's a great film.
Yeah. Humor. In the sadistic kind of way, the
swear to me.
I like that part in Begins, but Dark Knight is probably my favorite. I think I like, if I'm just talking about Nolan's trilogy, it's Dark Knight, Begins, and then Rises probably, but those last two were, the number one and three are just really, really close to me. You go either way. I mean, really, not a bad film in the trilogy. And then, watching Keaton's, I was like, watching Keaton as Batman again. I guess I really liked Returns as a kid, and you watch it when you're older and, you're like, okay, well, there's some good performances here.
Did you see that video I posted to the Facebook group of the kid in 1992 complaining about how Batman Returns was violent for children? And I shared it and go, this kid's a pussy. It's like parent groups and kids. Oh, Batman Returns was violent for children. Like, oh my God. It's like, shit. Cause so
he's
tame.
Throwing bombs down the sewer after bad guys.
It's terrible.
Straps a bomb to that wrestler showed up. Oh yeah. The same guy that played, the fat dude, he's like, doesn't feel anything when Batman hits him. He's that's the guy who plays Leatherface in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies, the newer ones. But he straps a bomb, like this comic looking bomb to his belly and blows his ass up. I always thought the Batman armor on the Batmobile was really cool in that movie. That he just, I was like, man, I want a car that whenever you hit the alarm system, all these shards of plate armor just start, unfolding on your vehicle. That was cool. And then some of it's just really goofy, like Danny DeVito, whenever he's controlling the Batmobile, from his little Bat Arcade, is pretty funny. But man, I still can't get over Michelle Pfeiffer's portrayal of Catwoman. I think it's still my favorite. She's just so crazy. And then of course, whenever she licks Batman, I don't know how you top that. Oh, and then I watched Mask of the Phantasm. which I think was technically at least a theatrical release.
It was.
Yeah, for one day, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah, one weekend, weeks. Right?
Yeah. Was
it? No, it had a full theatrical release. It just didn't stay in theaters a real long time, but it was actual. It wasn't like a special release. It was actual theatrical release.
And, I like how he comes to the knowledge that the Joker is one of the mafia men just by drawing a red smile on him. He's like, wait a second.
It's arguably one of the best Batman theatrical releases. I mean, it's a really good movie.
Yeah, no, I still enjoy it. You know, still, it's still really good. I just think it's, you know, it's funny. You know.
Yeah. I didn't watch a whole lot. I did finish. I guess it's only going to be one season, 1883, and man, it's one of the best written shows I've watched in a long time. I mean, if you're into westerns, it's worth the watch. It's worth. You don't even have to have watched Yellowstone to watch it. It completely stands on its own. It's only a prequel to Yellowstone because it's the family name from that show, but it stands on its own and very well written, very well done show. It's not happy, that's for sure. I mean, I'll tell you now, if you finish watching it, Matt, have some tissues near you for the last couple episodes because it literally ended. And I had to sit there for a couple minutes and kind of gather my thoughts when it was over. I mean, it's pretty deep. But really well-written stuff, man. Taylor Sheridan is hitting out of the ballpark in Hollywood as far as it comes to television right now. He's doing a really heck of a good job. And I really can't recommend watching 1883 enough. If you're ever into Westerns, it's really worth watching. And I didn't watch all the Batman movies like you did, but I did watch Batman Hush. I just felt like watching it. And I think it's a pretty good adaptation from the comics. Yeah, it changes some stuff, but you know, it's pretty solid, I think, for the most part. And
yeah,
I like it. And it's good. It's good stuff. But that's really about all I watched. So I watched a little bit, even though long slacked off over there this week. But that's okay. We'll forgive him. Maybe this featured film stayed on his thoughts all week, and he had to think about it more. Right, Long?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had to think of a topic. Ooh, for the debate. That was hard. Yeah.
It's always tough whenever you're on the spot to come up with a topic, you know, because you're like, well, make it relative. Do I not, you know?
Yeah. Well, I had an idea.
No, that's only you, Matt. You were thinking.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I'm going to see how this this topic will pan out. I think it's probably one of the deepest topics that we'll debate for sure, but it's pop culture related. So,
oh yeah, yeah,
yeah,
good one.
But anyways, I guess I'll summarize it since it's been a long time since I've summarized a movie.
Well, as people know, today's featured film is The Batman, which is currently in theaters. So,
yes. Starring Robert Pattinson and what's her name? Zoe Kravitz?
Yep.
Zoe Kravitz.
No? Zoe Kravitz.
This is Zoe Kravitz.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Dano and
Turturro.
John Turturro. And who else? Who played Commissioner Gordon? I'm sorry.
Jeffrey Wright.
What's his name? Jeffrey Wright. Thank you. From Westworld, right?
Mm-hmm. James Bond.
Yeah. So, yeah, basically it's about the Batman, and it's a crime noir / psychological thriller, and Batman spends most of his time trying to solve the mystery and the motive of the Riddler's series of killings and acts of mayhem, and it all traces back to the biggest mystery that ties all these murders together, including Batman's own past. So that's the gist of the movie and the whole thread of Batman trying to solve why the Riddler's committing all these heinous crimes. Mm. And order to, it ends up uncovering the city's darkest secret that involves all the highest members of the city government. So that's basically the gist of it. So,
yeah. Well, and anybody beware, we are going to spoil the fuck out of this movie. So I think that's a given since it's our feature film this week. You've been warned. So, but if you leave, come back and listen after you've seen the movie.
Mark, you didn't stay for the post credits, did you? I forgot to text you to don't waste your time.
Yeah, and I already knew not to waste your time. I had to go pee anyway. So 3 hours, it's a bladder test, this movie.
Yeah.
Or I'm just getting old, either one. Well, that's a good summary, Long. My initial thoughts on this movie walking out of the theater was as a lifelong Batman fan, I've read a lot of comics and stuff, and I think it's real easy for people to walk out and compare this to Batman films that have came before, but I think it's so different from those films that it's okay to like different ones for different reasons. I mean, I'm always going to have a nostalgia for Michael Keaton's Batman. It's the movie that changed my perspective of Batman and changed my life in a lot of ways, like Star Wars did. It's gave me a different look at superheroes, so always have an appreciation for it. Then there's an appreciation for the Nolan films for modernizing Batman and rebooting it and bringing it back to current times. But the Batman that we are talking about today is, quite honestly, the more I've thought about this over the last week, is the Batman movie that I really always wanted to see and I never realized it. It's Batman being a detective. It's Batman not being perfect. He has his flaws as he's still learning how to deal with Batman. Or deal with what he's doing, whether it's the right thing. I really like the fact of how he's still kind of learning how to be Bruce Wayne too. Where one thing in Nolan's trilogy, I don't always feel like Batman, I always don't feel that Bruce Wayne cared enough in some ways in Nolan's film. You know, it was always just about, does that make sense? Whereas this, it feels like Bruce is going to have to learn to care. I felt like by the end of the movie, he did learn that, like, you know, I have to be Bruce Wayne and I have to be Batman, and he has to care about his city. This immediately had my favorite Catwoman. I think Zoe Kravitz captured the character better than anyone's come before. And Michelle Pfeiffer, you can argue all you want that she was a good Catwoman, and she was, but Zoe captured the Catwoman that I envision her as. Kind of spunky, kind of tough, and I think she was perfect. Pattinson's version of Batman is the version of Batman I always wanted. Menacing, with full of rage, but also he's going to do the right thing too. You know, he still has his no-kill rule, and I think he was really good in the role. Obviously, Colin Farrell does a great job as a Penguin. One of the big surprises of the film, you can't even recognize him in the makeup. It's phenomenal. This movie has my favorite Batmobile scene in it. And these are just all initial thoughts. Batman's entrance in this film is chilling. I mean, it was awesome. And I'll go on record right now and say it's the best entrance of Batman in any film. It's better than Keaton's, and Keaton's is iconic, but this is a better entrance. Just the mood that Matt Reeves set with the opening of the film and everything. It's perfect. And we're going to get deeper into all this. These are just my initial thoughts, and I'll let you guys have your initial thoughts too.
I'll go first. Let's see. We've had Affleck's Batman, in recent years. And that was more of a superhero version of
Batman. Yeah, superhero comic book, yeah.
Yeah. And I do enjoy Affleck's interpretation of it. And then, well, this I knew that going into this movie, it was going to be more of a crime procedural type movie. And I really enjoyed it from beginning to end. From the very first murder all the way through even the last frame of Batman looking up at the rescue scene of the helicopter coming down to take people away to, you know, life lift, I guess is what they call it. It's just a very gritty movie, very grounded. It, and in a lot of ways, it feels more grounded than the Nolan, you know, reality-based Batman movies, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, this is a Batman that's not as technologically advanced as you normally see him.
Yeah. Just and, still developing. Yeah, he's still developing.
Still developing.
Feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's definitely, I think it's definitely up there with Dark Knight for sure. So those are my initial thoughts.
Yeah. I liked the movie for what it, you know, was like, you know, it's a detective Batman movie. You've never seen Batman as much of a detective, as this film. You know, you had some small excerpts of, you know, from, I think, the Nolan films where he's like analyzing ballistics. You have the lightly irradiated bills, but you don't have like a full on, like, I felt like I was watching like Seven meets Batman. That's what I felt. I felt it looked like Seven, and then they're uncovering this like mystery, and, you know, it's dark, it's gritty, it's noir. But instead of having Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt, you've got Batman. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it, the mystery, what are the motives, and that whole process. She caught. As for his opening scene, I mean, I thought it was good. He beats up a bunch of people, you know. It's something I've seen Batman do, so I don't know if it has as much of an effect on me as maybe other people.
That's not what I'm talking about. The entrance. I'm talking about his initial entrance, where he walks out of the shadows, and the fear in their face when they see him. I mean, and the way that he's explained it, search your heart. You're so stuck in the past, Matt. It's the best entrance.
No, I know. It's really good music. You know, instead of having Zack Snyder's da-da, it goes da-da. It's you know, it's masterful. You change one note, it's great. But you know, I'm not saying it's a bad movie.
Now you're being condescending,
I'm just being sarcastic. No, sarcastic.
It's better than Keaton's entrance. It's the best entrance of Batman in a film.
Yes, Mark. Absolutely. You are 100% right. I'd say
it's the most creative.
I think it's definitely better than Keaton's. I did watch Keaton's movies, and yes, I agree. It's better than Keaton's. You know, wholesomely agree. You know,
I don't
and it's
agree.
Like, you don't agree?
I don't agree.
I do. There's things I like more about what Keaton is defending in his entrance. You know, at first I thought I was watching Batman's parents getting killed. And I was like, wait,
sacrilegious.
Yeah, I was like, no way.
Sacrilegious calling it better than Keaton's. No way. No way. No, it's different from Keaton's for sure. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
No, you can't use that line on me.
But it's like, if I were to say that I've never seen bad guys fearful of, you know, of a Batman entrance, you know, it's like whenever he's, you know, blasting in on Falcone's men. And they're just like, what the fuck's going on? And, you know, you get this notion, like, is the Batman even real? Is he a creature? Does he drink people's blood? You know, by the time he's surrounding them for a second time, you know, I'd say that, you know, we have a couple, you know, at least two performances of Batman that, you know, I feel like he's really struck fear in people, you know, and one may resonate more with you than the other. But, and maybe I am, you know, stuck in the past. You know, that seems like, you know, something that is probably fair to say. But no, I really enjoyed the film, and it's, you know, not knocking on, you know, Pattinson's portrayal. I do feel like he's very, he felt like moody teenager Bruce Wayne to me. Maybe that's, you know, goes with just the style of film. You know, but.
And not really. A lot of it's brought from the comics.
Yeah,
but see, that's where people, I can tell a lot. I see a lot of that on the internet. People complain about moody Bruce Wayne. A lot of these people haven't read a lot of Batman comics, because a lot of stuff's straight from the comics. a lot of the great Batman comics, Batman struggles with what he's doing, and he is moody, and whether he's doing the right thing. So I really don't have a problem with that. And people forget, Nolan did it too. The young Bruce Wayne scene where he goes to the courthouse and he's all moody about Joe Chill and all that. So, I mean, he didn't stick with the motif throughout all three movies, but it's in his film too. So that's a pretty common Bruce Wayne trait, though, honestly, to be kind of moody.
He definitely didn't stick on it, to your point. No. You know, from there he goes, okay, I have to move on from this. I have to become a symbol. You know?
And the fact, and I think in fact, in the comics, Bruce tends to be the playboy part of Bruce is more along the lines of a James Bond type deal where, yeah, he might sleep around with women and stuff, but then he sends them home. Where Nolan tried to play it up a little more corny, a little more like, oh, I just bought the hotel and the girls are swimming in the hotel thing and all that. And that's really a lot of the deeper Batman comics I've read, that never really happens, you know. So that's some stuff that Nolan played up and played the Playboy stuff up. Bruce has always been more of a darker, moody character. And that's why him and Superman have always been, in the comics, best friends, but also at times they hate each other because they're such polar opposites. You know, Clark is the Boy Scout, happy, let's save everybody. And Bruce is the, I'm going to be dark and menacing. And, you know, so I think Pattinson's version is pretty right on the nails with that as far as the way Bruce is. Especially, remember, this is year two. So Bruce is still learning how to deal with all this. He still isn't over his parents' death. You know, he's coming to terms with it. I'm okay with the way that's played because I think it's
directly from the comics. He doesn't even know if it's helping. Yeah.
Right. And he struggles with it. And that's why he talks to Alfred about it when Alfred's in the hospital. Like, you know, am I doing the right thing? And what am I going to figure this out? And I think by the end of the film, whenever he's helping the people in the arena, I think that's kind of a sign that Bruce is starting to figure it out. You know, that like I have to, you know, be a symbol as much as I need to watch out for myself too. So, you know, I think it's all part of the character development that we may see as we hopefully get a sequel to this and see more of that, you know.
Well, take on another symbol on top of what he's already started out with.
Right.
You know, he would, to start out the movie, he was a symbol of fear, but he realized, later on, he had to be a symbol of hope too.
Right. So. And then talking about, like, you know, you say, like, you've never seen any other film where Batman instills fear. Well, of course you've seen other films because, I mean, you know, the essence of the character is going to remain the same throughout different incarnations of the character in the movie. But I just think the way that this was handled was something we hadn't seen before with the film noir style. It almost feels like a black and white and brown film at times because it's so dark, you know, but it sets the mood so well. And I like that. I love the fact that we get a lot of Batman in this film. I mean, it's probably 85% Batman, 15% Bruce Wayne. And I really like that. Mm-hmm. You know, because one thing we can all agree on the Nolan trilogy is that there's parts where Batman disappears for long periods of time in the films. And it's like, okay, are we going to have Batman in this film? Especially in The Dark Knight Rises. It's nice to have Batman throughout this film solving these crimes. And definitely the brutality of this film was definitely it. I was watching it and people said it was borderline rated R. I didn't feel that. I didn't feel it was that dark because it's not really a bloody or gory movie, but it maybe pushes. Yeah,
they don't showcase the blood a lot.
This might be one of those movies where you could argue that, you know, like overseas they have a PG-15 rating. I mean, it's not called PG-15, but it's like 15A or whatever. This is one of those films that you could argue that the United States needs another mid-level rating. You can maybe argue that, you know, but I didn't feel it was so dark that it could have been rated R, you know. It's just definitely a dark PG-13 film. The Riddler is a bit – we haven't even talked about the Riddler yet. Paul Dano plays Riddler, and he does what Paul Dano does, which is always really great acting in films he's in. I didn't find him so much scary or frightening as I found him just kind of just really eerie and kind of like a twisted edge to him. Socially awkward, a twisted edge to him. You know, we don't see a whole lot of him for much of the film. It's all shot through, like, you know, FaceTime or videos and things like that. So you just kind of get glimpses of his terror, other than at the beginning of the film where we see him beat the hell out of the was that the mayor? I'm trying to remember. Is the mayor at the beginning?
Yeah.
That he kills first? Yeah. So, you know, that's probably the best view you get of him until towards the end of the film. It was definitely a different take on the Riddler to make him a serial killer instead of a guy that's usually doing mind games and trying to, you know, steal money or whatever, you know. So.
Yeah, it had very, very sadistic riddles. The thumb drive, you know. Mm-hmm. That was a very... A
little bit dark humor too.
A riddle, yeah.
Yes.
What does a dead liar do? He lies still.
Yeah.
And it's like very, very dark and twisted. Kind of like the transition we had from. I almost feel like it's almost at. You know, we had the transition from Carrie's Riddler to this Riddler in a way, and you had Jack Nicholson who was very upbeat, and then the transition to a sadistic type of Joker. I felt like maybe it was the same kind of same take, maybe.
Yeah.
Not that one performance would be better than the other. I think right. You could say there's something good about each one, but just you take it, you make it darker, and you get something different out of it.
Right. Well, yeah, because I've told people have said, Jim Carrey is goofy. I'm like, no, he's not. He was hired to do exactly what they wanted him to do. They hired Jim Carrey, paid him $20 million to play the Riddler, and they wanted Jim Carrey. That's what they wanted.
Yep.
He was hired to do what he was hired to do. And that doesn't make it a bad performance. He did what he was hired for. And the same thing with Paul Dano. He was hired to make a more twisted, like you said, a more sadistic, much more mature, different version of the Riddler we had in 1993. And it's a much, much, much different movie than Batman Forever ever will be, you know.
Man. Batman.
What did
forever.
Y'all think of? What did y'all think of John Turturro's performance in this?
He was good. Solid. I mean, Turturro is real known for comedy and stuff, but I've seen him do some serious stuff before, and he's always good on screen, whether he's being funny or whether he's being serious. He's one of those, I think, underrated character actors that doesn't always get enough credit for his work. You know, I think he's really good. And I thought he played a really good Falcone. You know, I thought he was really – I really liked that – I don't know if it's a twist in the film where the Riddle was to bring the rat into the light. And then when he brings him into the light and the Riddler shoots him, I thought that was a great twist to the film that I really didn't see coming, you know. Thought that was cool. Yeah. That Falcone was the mob informant the entire time, you know.
Yeah.
So I did not expect that. I was thinking, because the story leads you to believe that it's someone in the police department the entire time. You know, even Gordon is concerned that there's a bad cop in there. And then they throw that twist at you. They throw that twist at you that it's not a cop this whole time. It's actually Falcone is the informant. And that I thought that was really cool, you know, that he was the rat.
The rat and, with wings.
Yeah. There's kind of a
running joke in the movie. It comes with the club scene. So Batman first appears at the club, and the dude, the bouncer, is like, Batman asks, "Do you know who I am?" And the bouncer's like, "Should I care?" Right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, so Batman kind of beats his way through.
Right.
And then the second time he appears at the club, he appears as Bruce Wayne. He says, "Do you know who I am?" And the bouncer's like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, come on in."
Yeah.
Right. And
Prince then, of Gotham.
Yeah. The third time he appears at the same club, he didn't even bother. He just sneaks in.
I like it. Yeah, he's not even there. He plays Ding Dong Ditch in a sense, and then he just, you know, flies right in.
I don't get that reference. Who's Ding Dong Ditch?
Well, you know, they knock on, he opens the door, the bouncer opens the door, he's not there the third time. And then he walks outside. He's like, "What the heck?" And then he just, like, he's on the top of the door and slips in.
It's a nice little subtle running gag there, you know. Once you think about it, it's like, it's kind of funny when you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Huh? Yeah.
One thing I wanted to touch on, Tim Burton took a lot of slack for changing the parents' backstory, right? The parents were killed by Jill Chill, not the Joker, right? So what do you guys feel about going from Martha Kane to Martha Arkham? Fabricate. Well, instead of...
Was it Martha Wayne?
Well, her surname was Martha Kane in the comics. It was never Martha Arkham. Fabricating the Arkham side of the story to make it to where Bruce's mom was actually mentally ill. And
I see it. It's the movie's own continuity. I didn't think it was.
Yeah. I didn't really think about that too much either. I mean, very minor story change, I think. I mean, you know.
I always view the movies as their own continuity, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Because they're just adaptations of the comics, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to change some stuff to make some things make sense. Yeah, you can't go the Schumacher route and just make it look like a comic.
Well, I want to talk about something you mentioned about that. Like, you know, you like in Nolan's films, they use the League of Shadows origin where Bruce was trained with the League and stuff. But, you know, when I saw Batman Begins, that caught me off guard as a longtime Batman fan. You know, that was Dennis O'Neill when they brought O'Neill into the 70s and asked him to get Batman out of the campy era of the show. He darkened it with the League of Shadows origin. But the original origin of Batman was always that he was trained himself and he was trained by Alfred. So I didn't really have a problem with him going back into this version. I mean, because that is the original version of Batman. And in fact, some of the modern comics have kind of traced back to where he was trained by origin and have kind of done away with the Dennis O'Neill origin. So, you know, that's another thing that's just changed many times over the years. And so the original version is, you know, that he was trained by Alfred because Alfred was ex-Special Forces, you know, and helped him.
I talked to Ron about that early in the week. He was ex-MI6, met Thomas Wayne in World War II as a field surgeon for the British Special Forces and became his butler. Actually trained him as a boy. Bruce would later go on to train with masters around the world in different martial arts before coming back home and becoming Batman. So he got.
I've always thought in the comics he had multiple masters.
Right.
He did.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And like I said, and then when Dennis O'Neill came in, he kind of modernized it with the League of Shadows thing. Which, when I saw Batman Begins, that kind of caught me off guard because I was like, "Oh, that was interesting." They went that route because a lot of people when Batman Begins came out weren't super familiar with the League of Shadows origin because it was something that was done at one time, but most people knew the origin where he had trained himself and with other masters around the world. So that was, you know, I was okay with them going back to that route. Let's talk about the Penguin. You know, I thought that first of all, Colin O'Farrell is fantastic in the role. I mean, Colin has always been a very good actor. He really has. You know, he just, and he's unrecognizable in the makeup. He plays kind of a low-level mob guy in this who's answering to Falcone. Maybe not low-level, but mid-level. And because he's not really in charge of the Iceberg Lounge yet. I guess he is now since Falcone is dead by the time the movie ends. So I guess in the next one, the Penguin will have taken care of the Iceberg Lounge. I think he's definitely maybe the most accurate screen version we've had of the Penguin so far. I mean, Danny DeVito, don't get me wrong, he did a good job and he's fun, but this is definitely closer to what Penguin is in the comics. You know, he starts out as a mob enforcer and then ends up working his way up and looks like he's going to be running some things from here on out. And he's arguably involved in the most badass scene in the movie. I don't necessarily think that the Batmobile is better than any of the other Batmobiles. But when that engine comes on, and it's just like you knew what was fixing to happen as a fan, and it was freaking awesome, you know. And that whole sequence is this from the cinematographers to Matt Reeves' direction. It is shot fucking awesomely, as he chases the Penguin down, and then the explosion happens, and the car flips, and the way the camera angles are shot with the Penguin looking at Batman upside down. That was when they say a scene gives you chills in the movies. That was one of those type scenes. I thought it was I thought it was gonna be hard to top the truck flipping, fighting the Joker in the Dark Knight. But man, this might be one of the coolest Batman scenes in any of the Batman films. It was awesome.
It was an adrenaline rush, and trying to squeeze in between cars, and then you get the POV shot from the back thruster. I feel like that's one thing. If you're looking for a constant in Batman films, every single Batmobile has that rear thruster on the back. And it's like, and I felt like this one, I think only in this one and the Tumbler, it was actually looked like it was functional. In the Keaton films that I watched earlier in the week, I was like, he's got the rear thruster on. How come these Crown Vicks are catching up to him, man? Right. Like, does that thing even work? You know,
it also could be a process of filmmaking in 1988, 89 compared to 2020, 21 when Batman was filmed. You know,
yeah,
film techniques are a little different.
Yeah,
I do appreciate the car chasing in this film. For its intensity and for its visceralness, I'd say. Mm-hmm. I still think that my favorite Batman car chase sequence is the Dark Knights. For me, that's a pretty good, pretty.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's definitely great.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, my only beef with this. Car chase sequence. I mean, it's fantastic. It's stylistically done so well. I just don't have a sense of, I guess, wide angles. Not like, because I don't really understand the geography of where it's going in a way, but that's just a small nitpick. But I just like how in The Dark Knight, you can actually see the action. You can see, you know, things more clearly from a wider point of view.
That's fair.
But yeah, I mean, I do like this Batmobile sequence, though. I mean, I love it. It's just,
yeah. I thought it was cool too. Like, there's no shot of Batman in the Batmobile, which I think adds the intensity of the scene because it's just this menacing dark car is chasing the Penguin down, and you know who's in it as a viewer. You know who's in it as a viewer, but you never see it. I thought that was kind of the
Headless Horseman in a way.
Yeah. I thought that was cool because there's always shots in all the other films where you see Batman inside the Batmobile. And I thought it was a brave and cool choice for Matt Reeves to shoot it without ever seeing Batman inside the Batmobile. So I thought that was neat. It gave it more, like you said, it's menacing. Headless Horseman chasing down the Penguin. And then Colin's acting whenever his car flips over and he sees the Batman walking up to him. It's almost like you can almost feel him shitting his pants. He's like, oh shit, I'm screwed. It's like that fear he had and that was great. Catwoman, man. I from reading comics like Batman Year One and Hush and The Long Halloween, man, I think Zoe's version might be the closest we've had to how Catwoman is in the comics. I just really like the way she portrayed her. As she gets involved with the story through her friend going missing, which, woke culture is already pissed off because the film alludes to her being, you know, bisexual, which is, man, if you've been reading Batman comics for years, that's nothing new. It's always been there. Who cares, you know, right? And so she had a girlfriend. Whoop-de-doo. And she goes missing, so she gets involved with the case and helping Batman. Yeah, she likes the cat. And I thought she was great. She gave it. She had a sexiness to her, but also an edge and a toughness. And she was involved with, as we find out, that Falcone was her father. And that's another story change they made for the comics. There's nothing in the comics that ever indicated that Selina Kyle's dad was Falcone, but they did that in the movie, and I was okay with that. You know, it gave her a little bit more of a backstory to set up the continuity in these films. And I don't know what you guys think about Zoe. I liked what's her name in The Dark Knight Rises. Like, she was good, but, like, you know, she didn't feel like she never really, like, did a lot of Catwoman stuff, you know, where – And Michelle Pfeiffer probably overplayed the Catwoman stuff. But I think Zoe...
She was like Catwoman the burglar. Like,
yeah.
The,
I think Zoe found a good mix. And I think she was perfect.
Yeah. She definitely looked like she fought like Catwoman. Like kind of those sleek...
I like to apologize moves. For all the Halle Berry Catwoman fans.
Here. I know, right?
Or her being snubbed. No, joking.
Are there any Halle Berry Catwoman fans? I mean, that thing deserves 4%.
I would hope people. I would hope there's not.
That's arguably the worst DC film ever. And I wish she had some better support in that movie. I really wish it was better. Because I think Halle Berry could have been good, you know, with the good supporting cast around her. But it's kind of like, you know, take your pick. I mean, I don't think there's a bad Catwoman performance between Pfeiffer and Zoe. And I think, you know, you're probably right about her being closer to the comic book adaptation versus, you know, Michelle. Hers is more of a theatrical one. And an iconic one, and you know, both are good. You know, pick your poison. You know, but I like Zoe's performance. You know, I think she's solid. She felt like the animated version of Catwoman that I've seen in the DC movies as of late. You know, that's what I felt. That like the one from Hush. You know, Mark, I know you recently watched Hush, so that's kind of how I felt. The romantic, you know, version between her and Bruce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she is really good. And you know, people complain about the mask, but you know what? It was kind of a homemade costume. This felt like if this is year two of Batman, it's kind of year one of Catwoman. She's still kind of becoming Catwoman. In fact, they never call her Catwoman in the movie, you know, so that's kind of what I felt about that, you know, and she decides to leave Gotham at the end of the film, you know, which leaves it open for her going to Bloodhaven or wherever she decides to come back, if she comes back in the sequel. But I thought she was really good, and I thought she played well off of Pattinson's Bruce Wayne Batman. And you know, there was a lot of controversy when Pattinson was cast, as there always is anytime any kind of iconic character is cast, whether it's James Bond or Wolverine or any of these popular pop culture characters. And everyone wants to remember Pattinson because of the Twilight films, which is ridiculous. Those movies were almost 20 years ago. Every single actor in the world has movies they made for paychecks that might not be that good. And that doesn't mean they're not good actors. And one thing I thought that Pattinson did a really good job on was I thought he played the part very well. I loved how he chose to take the Michael Keaton route, where he just lowered his voice an octave when he played Batman instead of doing I'm gonna sound like I'm choking on something. Christian Bale version. I like Pattinson's version, and I thought Pattinson did a great job delivering the rage when it needed to be. Like, he was convincing when he's beating the shit out of people, you know. And I really like his iteration of Batman a lot. I like Christian Bale's version too, but and I know Matt, you said you didn't like the brooding, emo-ish Bruce Wayne, but honestly, Pattinson's Batman and his Bruce Wayne might be the closest we've ever truly gotten to coming off the pages. And that's what I think I liked about it. I mean, go back and read Batman Year One, or read even read Hush. Man, Pattinson's version is pretty damn close to what we get in the comics, more so than Bale's ever was. And obviously Keaton's is more of a theatrical, like you said, more of a theatrical type Batman. It's not so much grounded in reality like Bale's or even Pattinson's are. So it's hard to compare them all completely, but Pattinson's is so good. And anybody,
the bat suit itself,
I liked it. I thought it was a different take on the bat suit. I actually think it's pretty cool looking. I like how the Batarang comes off and he was able to use it as a weapon off his chest. I thought that was cool.
Superman homage, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I like Bale's costume is serviceable for what the movies are. You know, it's funny, even though Affleck's Batman is more like a comic book superhero version, he looks like he's wearing pajamas. I never really liked the costume all that much that Affleck wears.
Pajamas.
I kind of like the armor-looking costume more. I really like Pattinson's a lot. I really thought it was cool where he takes the Batarang off the chest at the end and uses it and then puts it back on. I thought that was really neat. Because, like you said, he's still kind of.
I think it's a nice evolution from the Dark Knight bat costume, because it had a collar and he could look up and down too.
Well, the Dark Knight costume is where he could look up and down and around. because he wanted to be able to back out of the driveway, so they revolutionized the suit, separated the armor plates.
Yeah.
It's different than, it's an upgrade from the Batman Begins suit, for sure.
Yeah. If I had any knock on Matt Reeves, the Batman, it might be the last 20 minutes. And in the film, Batman, the Riddler gets captured. You could argue that he wanted to be captured at that point, because he goes and sits in the diner, and they go in and they capture him. And so he goes to jail, and Batman visits him. And at first they allude to that you think the Riddler knows who Batman is. But then he says something to him where Batman realizes, okay, he doesn't know who he is. He's just guessing. And it turns out that he's got a bigger plan, as he has set bombs all over the city to flood Gotham, since it's built around a water main. And I thought that here we go again. I was like, another villain sacking Gotham kind of story. And that kind of caught me off a little bit. And he had these Riddler clones, and they all attack Gotham Square Garden. And Batman has to stop him, and he saves the day, and he uses some sort of adrenaline device to get himself back up and save Catwoman at the end of the movie there. And so it felt like the ending of the film felt a little, maybe a little bit contrived. There are some thoughts that they're setting up a No Man's Land type story with the flooded Gotham. But the rest of the movie was so good, I can forgive the ending, and I'm okay with it, if that makes sense. I just felt like, okay, it felt like a little bit too similar to things we've seen before in Batman films, you know. But it's okay. I can deal with it.
I liked it more than you did. I thought it was
I didn't dislike it.
Way to go.
I didn't dislike it. I just felt like, you know, it's like, I don't know. I just felt like it was more than destroying Gotham. I was fine with the Riddler followers and all that. It was just more like the flooding Gotham. Like, man, we've seen this before, a villain trying to destroy Gotham. You know, but it's okay. But what makes up for it is the story of the deeper criminal activity in Gotham that went all the way to Bruce's parents. I think that added element in showing how deep that the mob went in the city kind of makes up for that, because I thought that was an interesting twist to add to the, you know, the legacy of Wayne's parents' murder and their family and all that. So I thought that was cool. And we haven't even talked about Jeffrey Wright. I think Gary Oldman's fantastic as Gordon, but Wright is really good too. I really like Jeffrey Wright in the role. You know, I like the fact that they played on the fact that he has to kind of control Batman a little bit, and he also allows him to come around the other cops to get the cops to trust Batman and stuff, but he also has to keep Batman at bay. And I really thought that was neat. And a different take on the relationship that we had seen before in films.
Yeah. No, I like whenever he's like, you know, hit me, take the key and run out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. You know, and overall though, man, I think that it's okay to like every iteration of Batman, because there's something I like about the 80s, 90s versions, Adam West, the Nolan versions, and now this one. I do think the more I look back on it as the weeks gone by, this might be my favorite Batman film, and it might continue to become that as I watch it again. It's going to be on HBO Max like April 19th, 45 days after its release. But I still like The Dark Knight quite a bit too, in Batman Begins. I think The Dark Knight Rises is good, but I think that it suffers from no Heath Ledger, because they had to come up with a creative story to do a third one. And it shows. It's almost like they completely ignore The Dark Knight. Have you ever noticed how the events of The Dark Knight are kind of ignored in The Dark Knight Rises? Because it's more of a sequel to Batman Begins. So that's always kind of bothered me. It's like they had to force themselves into a story. But I still like the Nolan films. So I think it's okay to like all. And this movie is so different than the Nolan films that it's almost unfair to compare them. It's like comparing Man of Steel to Christopher Reeve's Superman. They're just completely different versions. And so it's hard to really compare. And it's okay to like both of them. but it's also okay to say you like one more than the other one. And I've seen a lot, and the reason I say that, I've seen a lot of people arguing all weekend long on the internet about which version is better, and it's like, it doesn't really matter. It's okay to like them all, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
unless someone says they like Clooney's version because of the Bat credit card.
Yeah, and the Bat nipple.
Simba's are fighting words right there.
but Batman Forever though, it's bad, but it's also, at least I can watch it. You know, it's kind of a fun movie. Yeah. I can watch it and not hate it. Where Batman and Robin, I'd rather watch my turds come out. You know, it's like it's so bad. Sorry, Matt. Did we make you choke? I mean, you're even Arnold Schwarzenegger fan, Matt. You know that movie's just awful. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, they're just like, okay, here's like 50 one-liners, Arnold. Just repeat all of them.
It's better than Catwoman, though. Only by a little bit.
Only by a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's only like 12% or something on
probably only because it's got stars in it. You know?
Yeah.
Oh.
Uma Thurman.
I mean, I won't judge, but real quick before we rank the Batman, where does the Batman stand right now as far as your favorite Batman films?
Third or fourth?
Third or fourth? Me,
it would.
Yeah, I think I'd at least put Dark Knight and Begins in front of it.
For me, it ties with Dark Knight, and then Keaton is second. The 89 Batman is second, and Begins is third, and fourth is Returns for me. So yeah,
I
put it up there with Dark Knight.
I'm kind of tied with Dark Knight, but I really like this a little bit more just because it's the Batman I always wanted to see on screen. I think this one's gonna really grow on me the more I watch it. I love the musical score in this one. I think it was fantastic. I thought Batman's theme was really good. There's just so much I really, as I thought about over the last few days, I really like. But I liked The Dark Knight a lot too. I'd probably put Batman Begins right behind The Dark Knight. You know, so I'd say the Batman just by a slight edge than The Dark Knight. It's almost like 1 and 1.5 for me, the Batman Begins. And I do like Michael Keaton's Batman because I grew up on it, but like, it's hard for me. I think I have an appreciation for it, but it's hard for me to put it real high up as far as ranking as the years go by because you see the flaws in it, you know, at times. But it's got some great stuff going for it too. It's got a great bat suit, a great Batmobile, the Art Deco done in that film.
Good art direction.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. So you know, so there are things I like about it, and I'm looking forward to seeing Keaton.
Score.
Return of the Suit, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit. We talk in the news, but if I had to rank the Batman right now, I'd give it an A+. I thought it was fantastic.
It's definitely
I'd give it an A plus.
Yeah,
I mean,
A+ in my book.
Yeah,
shot really well. Same cinematographer from The Mandalorian.
That your boy Ben Shapiro hated the movie.
Yeah, I saw that, and I'm like, he's just like too. There's one thing I do agree with him though. Colin Farrell, I think, was the best performance. He's just unrecognizable. Can't even tell it's Colin Farrell, and just like him hamming it up in the car chase scene was just really fun. I thought he was like the fun part of the movie, even though he's like diabolical. I just felt like he had the strongest performance. That's probably the only thing I agree with Shapiro on.
He stole some scenes.
When I walked out of it, I didn't feel anybody had a weak performance. I felt the movie had strong performances throughout the whole thing, honestly.
No, you know? That doesn't mean that everyone else is weak. I'm just saying that, you know, I felt like his stood out the most to me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Colin's always, like I said, good. And we've got some Colin news coming up, too, later. But before we get to the news, I guess it's time for this week's Duel of the Nerds. I'm on a win streak of like 3 weeks in a row. I'm kicking ass.
Yes.
And
or are we letting you win?
That's no. You know, Did you just foreshadow that I'm going to lose no matter what today? Man. long loss last week, so he gets to pick the topic and host this week.
All right. I picked this week. This week's topic between Matt and Mark. And the topic is, should Batman kill or not kill? I picked Matt to be pro-kill Batman, while Mark is no-kill Batman. So since Mark won last week's debate, he can go first to defend his position first.
All right. This is just, I mean, it goes back to just the moral high grounds of who Batman is. I mean, it's an obvious answer. No, he shouldn't kill, because if he kills, we've talked about this before, I think, on the show. It seems like we have. His mom and dad were murdered in front of his eyes. And so he becomes Batman to strike fear into the hearts of the criminals and to do justice in Gotham City and throughout the universe, and as a member of the Justice League. And if he kills, he's no better than them. I mean, this discussion has happened so many times. He's had it with Robin, where Robin has suggested to him, you know, if you would just kill him, we would be done with the Joker. He couldn't kill more people, or the Penguin, or the Riddler, or whoever he's fighting. But Batman maintains that he just cannot do it, because if he does that, then he crosses that line that the same people that killed his parents cross that line. And Bruce will never do that. And should he kill? Maybe there's an argument that he should, but why? What's it going to solve? If he crosses that line, then he goes to jail. Then he truly is a vigilante of the high. He's a vigilante like the Punisher, where he's killing people. Where right now he rides that line because he is doing good and he's helping out people. And it keeps his – what. And Bruce has talked about this in the books before, in the comics, where, you know, he's right on that edge. He knows he's well aware that if he was to kill someone, it could keep other people from being alive. But then it completely changes who he is as a man and as a symbol, as a hero, because if he darkens himself to that level, then there's no going back. And for Batman to be who he is and Bruce Wayne to be who he is, no, he can't kill. He has to stay as pure of heart as he can to continue his mission of justice for people like him that had his family killed and other people that have been victims of criminals in Gotham City and throughout the universe. And that's just it. I mean, it's just the moral high ground. There's no reason for him to ever have to kill.
All right. Like your point there. Go ahead, Matt. It's your floor.
Yeah,
Mr. Pro-Kill Batman.
Yeah. So we get a sort of version of what we would get if Batman killed in Batman versus Superman with Ben Affleck. And, you know, I think that this is a better version because, yes, there is a moral high ground. And it's cool to say that you can raise your pinky and, you know, oh, but when I, you know, when I enact violence, I don't take a life because I am morally superior than thee. But let's just take the Joker, for example. Out of 161 comic appearances, the Joker has broken out of prison and subsequently killed 140 people as a result of Batman's inaction to end his evil life as it stands. So how many of those lives are actually Batman's fault because he didn't kill? You know, like a bartender is arrested because they overserved someone and allowed them to go out into the world where they could possibly go harm. I think Batman deserves to do time for those 140 deaths that he allowed Joker, knowing that he was just going to walk out of jail and kill innocent children, you know, women, you name it. Maybe some people deserved it. Maybe he killed some, you know, rapist out there or some guy that liked George Clooney's Batman. Who knows? But, you know, it still stands that he knew this guy breaks out of prison all the time. And what happens when Joker breaks out of prison? He takes fear toxin and kryptonite, mixes it, and causes the fucking injustice storyline. you know, where Superman's evil and we live in the reign of the Superman. And not only that, he created the Oracle because he shot Barbara Gordon through the back, caused her to be paraplegic. And now Batman can't hit it no more, like he did in the beginning of the new Killing Joke we got. So it just causes all kinds of problems, you know. So he should kill because that's what the bad guys are going to do anyways after they break out of jail. They're just going to cause more victims and the victim strain.
So you're pro-kill.
Well, pro-kill. Pro-kill.
First off, I'm going to...
Go ahead, report.
I'm going to call, I don't know what the plead, the whatever, but you have to throw out anything about Injustice because that's a fake storyline, so it doesn't count, you know, so you can't use that. But the Joker is even, asked Bruce, why don't you end me? Why don't you end the torment for both of us? And Bruce says, believe me, I've wanted to, but more than anything, but I won't, because if I did, I'd be violating the belief that sustained me through all these years, and I believe in the absolute sacredness of human life. And that's what it means to be a superhero, is to value human life. And Bruce has also talked about how he has understood that what the Joker has done has cost lives, but he has to live with that every day, and he uses it to go out there and save other lives the best he can, and that's why he won't kill. He understands that yes, by not killing this guy, other people are going to lose their lives. But it's part. It's like any war. He has said it's part of war. It's part of battles. Unfortunately, people are going to die. But I can't take one life just to save others, because then it makes me, again, no better than anyone else. And dear God, what are you doing? And that's just it. He cannot do it no matter what. One life does not mean giving up his beliefs and what he believes in.
Yeah, that one life of the victim he could have saved, the Joker's next victim, not worth giving his moral system up. Sounds about right. You know, sometimes you have to give up your moral system in order to do true justice, like Ra's al Ghul would. You know, Ra's al Ghul knows what's necessary.
But he's a villain.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, Batman can learn from his villains. Batman's even funded Bane in some aspects to take over other criminal overlords. Now he's had to go back and fight Bane. But his moral fiber only protects one life, and that's the life of the Joker or Scarecrow or any of these other, you know, horrible supervillains that, you know, prey on fear from the innocent. And honestly, you know, it's like these thoughts and prayers argument. It's like, oh, but I feel for these victims. Well, you're creating more victims by letting this guy live. It's like, do something that's actually going to stop the destruction of more lives and more torment.
I think his minute is up long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
You got longer. Well. But, oh, well.
I actually went less. I was winding time, and it actually went 53 seconds on my rebuttal.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot I was supposed to keep time, huh?
Yeah,
oh,
it's close enough. Close enough.
This is a tough one, because I have to pick. But I'll put in my thoughts on it, right? Mark's points do have a lot of validity to it, because it's true to how Batman is portrayed in the comics. Not consistently so in the movies, right? Because the movies, this is like the first Batman movie where he absolutely says no kill in plain words, right? And in the Nolan films, Batman distinctly said in Batman Begins, you know, I won't kill you, but I don't have to save you either. Right. It's kind of a cop out way.
Yeah.
So it's kind of inconsistent in the film itself, but we're talking about the overall portrayal of Batman overall. Matt, you do raise some compelling points about, if Batman had killed, then other victims would be saved. Right. That's right. The gist of it. However, I feel that it's not Batman's fault that Joker ends up killing more, claiming more victims, because it's ultimately Joker's choice of doing the killings himself. You know, so Batman did his thing where he captured Joker, and it basically illustrates the failure of the justice system that won't.
That he's aware of.
No, I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
It's ultimately the Joker does run free, but it is still ultimately the Joker's choice of killing people, not Batman's choice. Batman does his job. He captures the criminals and he lets justice, the justice system decide the fate, but they keep throwing them into the mental hospital for some reason instead of an actual prison, prison. But it's always the perpetrator that does the killing, right? That the responsibility should always be on the perpetrator, you know. And Batman may have some indirect involvement, but ultimately he did his job. Other parties are supposed to do theirs. This is so tough. But I'm going to have to give this one to Mark. I'm sorry.
Damn.
Mark got it for the fourth week in a row.
Well, the topic you picked, though, it's hard when you pick an opinionated topic. That's why sometimes battles are easier. But
yeah.
I wanted
I'm kind of biased about it myself because I do believe that Batman shouldn't kill either.
I wanted to,
a tough subject.
Before we get to the news, I wanted a couple of quick things we didn't even touch on the film. The Joker cameo at the end. I thought that was cool. And I love the fact that Matt Reeves
actually didn't like it. I didn't like it.
I like the fact that Matt Reeves is saying, don't guarantee that means the Joker is going to be in the next one. He might save the Joker for even later. And I also thought I really liked how the world already exists in this film, where Nolan did some world building in his Batman films. I love the fact that they allude to, you know, like the Joker is there. Apparently the viral website shows that Two-Face might already exist in this world. And I kind of like that Reeves's version of the Batman puts you right in this world and these characters exist around it. Apparently the rumor is that he put the Joker in jail his first year as Batman, you know, and this is year two. And I thought that was kind of cool. That was just the world already exists. I love universes where the world already exists and you can world build around it. Like John Wick, you know, they use the first one, the world already exists. And the second one, the world builds around it. And it feels like Matt Reeves might do that with this one, as they'll build more out in the world than the second one. So I thought that was cool. So I put on that stupid fucking mask, Matt.
Take control of your city.
We're not talking about that movie. Anyway, let's do some news before we exit out of here. We'll stick with the Batman a minute. The HBO Max is greenlit the Penguin spinoff series. And Colin Farrell's going to come back. And I'm not sure if this is going to spin off directly from the movie. I think I read somewhere that it might be kind of a prequel where it shows how he gets involved with Falcone. So I guess that means maybe John Turturro's going to come back too. That'll be interesting, though. There were originally two spinoffs planned. There was also going to be a Gotham PD one. But now I guess that is going to turn into a Arkham Asylum type spinoff show. So we'll see where they're going with that. I guess we can just trust in Matt Reeves and his team and see what they come up with. So, but I definitely could watch some more Colin Farrell as a Penguin.
Oh, for sure.
And we'll stick with DC for a minute. More film delays. They didn't really say no sure it was COVID or not, but we are not going to get The Flash this year. We're going to have to wait till June 23rd of next year, which is the same date that 1989 Batman was released on June 23rd, we're going to get The Flash next year. So we have to wait a little bit longer for Michael Keaton's return, sort of. He may still appear in Batgirl first, but a lot of talk is Batgirl will get pushed back as well, because all indication are is that the events of The Flash have effect on the events of the other movies. So Batgirl may end up getting pushed back to after the Flash now. So we may have to wait a little bit longer to see Michael Keaton's return. Black Adam got pushed back from the summer until the fall, but then they moved Shazam 2 up to this December. So DC doing some flipping of their movies. And Aquaman also got pushed back all the way till next March, I believe. Aquaman 2. So COVID and other delays continue to cause movie releases to be pushed back. Amazon has ordered a God of War adaptation to television, or their at least a pilot. That's cool. You know, God of War for years has been, people have always felt it would make a good movie or TV adaptation. So we'll see. I know, Long, you played God of War. It's an awesome game. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could make for a good show.
I'll be interested to see how that's portrayed.
Yeah. Paramount continues to not get their shit together. As we know, a couple weeks ago, they announced that J.J. Abrams was going to produce a Star Trek 4. And all unknowing to the entire cast. And now Chris Pine has came out and said, you know, y'all want me back? Show me a script. So I'm at this point, I don't think Trek 4 is ever going to happen. I want it to happen, but, you know, it's like you announce the film and you don't even have the cast involved in it. Shame on them. J.J. Abrams should know better than that. It's like, come on, guys. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But oh well. But one thing that is happening on May 25th on Disney Plus, we got the first trailer this week for the next Star Wars television show, and that is Obi-Wan Kenobi. And this was only a minute and a half trailer, but boy, howdy, it was a lot in a minute and a half. We have Inquisitors. We have the Duel of the Fates song. We have Ewan McGregor returning as Obi-Wan. To say I'm super excited about this is an understatement.
Yep, yep. I try not to get overhyped by it. So
the Grand Inquisitors.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. The looks like a kid Luke is Obi-Wan's keeping an eye on him. Yeah, man. We know Darth Vader's going to be in it. Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those things that Ewan McGregor doesn't do unless he knows it's going to be good. And I'm excited for it. So a couple months away till May 25th till that comes out. And so we'll see. That's all the news. Before we get out of here. And let's preview next week's film as we a couple more movies this month. And then April is always our theme month, one of our two theme months we do for the year usually. And I got outvoted for this year's theme month by you fucks. And I actually don't have a name for the theme month yet, but it will involve comedies. That's all I'll say. And I'll come up with some clever name for the theme month here in the next week or so.
But, Fool's Month.
But next week's movie is a movie that it almost is. It's a part comedy, part science fiction, but it's a hell of a lot of fun movie. Starring Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. And we're going to cover Men in Black on next week's show.
We work for a highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
We'll take it from here.
Who the hell are you?
INS Division 6.
There is no Division 6.
Our mission is to monitor extraterrestrial activity on Earth.
You're all here because you're the best of the best. And we're looking for one of you.
Hey, what's up?
I want to get some coffee. You want some coffee?
No, thank you. I'm fine.
Hey,
you
guys
get along all right?
All right, I'm in.
From now on, you will have no identifying marks of any kind. You are no longer part of the system. We are the Men in Black.
You know what the difference is between you and me? I make this look good.
Series 4 deatomizer.
That's what I'm talking about.
Noisy cricket.
I feel like I'm gonna break this damn thing.
Oh, it gets better. Dad, we have a bug.
Unlimited technology from the whole universe, and we cruise around in a Ford POS.
Fasten your seatbelt.
See, now we got to work on your people skills.
Columbia Pictures and Amblin Entertainment present.
I knew it. This is an alien, and you guys are from some government agency trying to keep it under wraps.
No.
Tommy Lee Jones.
I'm gonna count to three.
He'll do it, Jeeves.
One.
I'm telling you, that man does not look stable.
Two.
He's always crazy. Why don't you get a massage or take a cream?
Three.
Do you have any idea how much that stings?
Will Smith.
What the hell are you?
Your world's gonna end.
In a new film from the director of The Addams Family and Get Shorty. Men in Black. Protecting the Earth from the scum of the universe.
You know how to use these things?
No idea whatsoever.
This is a good movie, based on a comic book as well. You know, Will Smith at the top of his game back in the day when he was making his movies, were making millions of dollars every film that came out, and the always good on screen Tommy Lee Jones. So that'll be a fun one to talk about on next week's show. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, but I bought a cheap copy off of eBay for like $4, and it showed up at the house the other day. So because I didn't have a copy of it, I thought I did, but. I guess not, but Men in Black on next week's show. But
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot he was in that. He plays like the bad guy or something, or like the bad guy gets taken over by an alien or something like that. But yeah, that's next week's show. And until then, go to RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. Go see The Batman if you haven't, and come back and listen to everything that you missed if we spoiled things. It's truly great film, and hopefully. It's a sign that cinema is going to start slowly coming back as we get closer to the summer months. But until next week, this is continue to stay safe. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the Bat Chum.
And remember, as always, just go there and do it.